Malaine had been invigorated by the Alice water, but now she was tired again. The mountain had proven to be farther away and higher than she had expected, and even shoulder-high trees were an impediment to swift travel, especially when she had to carry three boys in her hands. She had gotten scratched and had put her foot carelessly in a soggy stream and tripped over a foothill, but had made progress. She was approaching the top of the mountain. The trees had gotten shorter and the grass more normal on the slope. Now, she was almost at the crest and her cupped hands felt more crowded than when she started. She realized that possibly when she shrank back to her normal size, it would not be all at once, but gradually. It might be happening already. She forced her feet to carry her giant self and passengers the last few steps. She peered over. There were rolling mountains and fog. Her heart sank. It seemed that the distance was much farther than she had thought. One of the little kings was muttering something. With her head up here, she couldn't quite hear.
Keldum says let's change into birds. Why don't we?
She hesitated. She was really tired of walking. She wished she had the book, but the book was now small. When she had enlarged herself, her clothing and her pack and the bottle had all enlarged as well. So, did it make sense to invoke a bird spell now? She decided to mind Snoop. No one would know it, and it couldn't be worse than stealing. She looked down at little Keldum reading, and he was reading the index.
Bird. Bird odeur. Bird feathers. Bird flight. Bird materialization. That it?
It is. It has to be.
Malaine? That you?
Who else? They want to help.
Okay.
Keldum read. It took time, but gradually the spell for bird materialization was in both their heads. There had to be a symbol marked on the ground with fresh blood. She hadn't known Helba did that sort of magic, as blood was a characteristic mostly of evil spells. But if that was what it took to fly, they'd have to do it. The odd thing was that Auntie John hadn't needed any blood when she changed them to swooshes. So this was evidently something else. But it was what they had to work with.
You do it.
What?
Make the symbol. You are shrinking, I can tell. One drop of your blood will be as much as a cupful when you're shrunk. You can draw the symbol now, and then, when you're the proper size, you can dance in it.
She didn't like doing it, but what he suggested made sense. She drew her dagger. She hated pricking herself because it hurt, but she knew she had to. Taking the dagger, she placed its point against a thumb and pressed. She used the blood to make the symbol, stood within its points, and dabbled blood down her forehead. She was now three times the height of Charles, which was pretty small compared to what she had been. She had to hurry. The symbol she had drawn was now roomier. Carefully, hoping she was doing it correctly, she twirled as the book had directed. She had never tried this sort of magic before, and it made her nervous. She feared that any little error she might make could have dire consequences.
Bird!
You expected a fish?
Marlene strained her eyes. It was a bird, a huge bird. As it came closer, she saw that it wasn't really a bird, but something closer to a dragon. It had feathered wings, a great scaly neck, and a head far more reptilian than any bird.
No, she expected a monster.
The thing opened its mouth, and there were needle-like teeth that weren't at all bird-like. Great talons hung below the creature. The kinglet seemed ready to flee, but weren't sure where they could hide up here on the top of the mountain, so they stood petrified. The monster descended. It circled them twice, thrice. Its great talons opened and closed as if uncomfortable being empty. It seemed about to pick up one of them on its next pass. The two kinglets started down the too steep mountain. Charles drew his sword. So far, it hadn't helped any, but it did seem to give him confidence. He waved it and took a stance. Malaine winced. The teeth in the mouth of the monster were longer than his sword.
Stop! Stop, bird! Don't hurt him!
The bird pulled back its wings, put its feet down, and came in on the narrow mountaintop in a rough landing. It flopped over, its head almost at Charles' feet. Charles aimed the sword high, aiming for the eye of the creature.
No, Charles! No! It's magic! I brought it!
think at it.
Charles' blade wavered. He screwed up his face. She knew he was thinking. As if responding to his thought, the huge creature blinked an eye once, twice, thrice. It was responding. She had been right. Charles put away his sword. He walked over to the bird and scrambled upon its huge, scaly neck. The bird lifted its head, easily lifting Charles as well. It sat upright, its big feathered wings folded at its sides. One of the kinglets came back. He looked terrified.
I'm Kildum, and my brother...
The huge dragon bird flapped its wings, raising a breeze that she felt, and it almost blew Kildum off the mountain. It lifted up, Charles hanging on to the rough scales near the back of its head. It was carrying Charles, but was it under his control? The bird flew and circled. It flew overhead and to the side. Charles waved to them. Mullane waved back, relieved. Hesitantly, Kildum waved as well, realizing that all was just maybe well.
That's our steed. It's magic. I brought it here for us to ride. No other predator birds will attack us when we're with this one.
My brother!
What about your dumb old brother?
He needs help!
Disgusted, Merlane went to the very edge of the cliff with him and looked where he was pointing. Kildy, very white-faced, was hanging with both hands to a small, insecurely rooted tree. Below Kildy's boots was a long drop to the start of Dreadful Forest and the river she had crossed.
Kildy! Can't you pull yourself back?
No! The roots are giving! Help!
Merlane reached down to Kildum and grabbed him.
Hey! It's my brother who's falling, not me!
I know! Shut up!
Merlane lifted him over the cliff's edge, then changed her hands until she had him by the ankles.
Oh, stop! Let me go!
Oh, shut up! I'll swing you down and you grab his hands!
Hurry!
The roots had just pulled out more and bits of dirt were raining down on his face. She swung Kildum down so that he could reach his brother. The brothers locked hands just as the tree let go. Merlane felt herself reduced in size as the tree dwindled with distance. She strained to hold on to Kildy's ankles, but her hands were now too small and too weak. She was slipping over the edge herself. Something was holding her. Something like a big, rough hand, crossing her shoulders and back and curling around the rest of her, terribly strong. She shut her eyes, hanging on to the kinglet. Then Kildy was grasping her arms, having climbed up over his brother. A moment later, both Kildy and Charles were prying her fingers from Kildum's ankles. With her watching, they pulled the clumsy young king back onto the mountain and away from the drop. Turning her head slightly, Merlane saw the talon holding her. Charles must really have control of this thing. Kildy had evidently just realized that the pleated belly and the hanging feathers were part of the flying creature he had sought to escape.
Oh, shut up! It's only a little bird! Charles, if you'll get this bird's foot off from me, we'll continue our journey.
What are you doing, Grandma?
The old woman blinked. The policeman had come up behind her so quietly that she had not seen him until he spoke. She had been trying to find something edible in a pail of garbage, hoping for another nice soiled loaf of bread, but knowing that the one she had lost had been the only one in all the world.
Hungry?
Let me see your identification.
Identification? You mean like a mole in my cheek or...
Papers. Levitation license, unsocial insecurity number, credence card, passport.
I'm long past sport. I don't have any papers or cards or numbers.
No identification. You'll have to come with me to the station house. We can't have you wandering all over the city. There's a big convention with a lot of important tourists in town. We don't want to give a bad impression.
But...
We'll feed you there. We'll let you clean up. We'll get you some different clothes. We're not barbarians. You'll be all right, unless you have a criminal record.
I don't have any record of anything.
Oh, you have a record. Everyone has a record. We'll find it. The only question is whether it's a good record or a bad record.
You'll find it?
You can find out who I am when I don't even remember.
We have ways.
He had his baton unclipped from his belt and was pointing it at her, and she was a bird. A pretty white dovekin, whose feathers shone as if just washed. This was certainly an improvement on her prior form.
Well, Granny, I didn't expect you to look like this. Maybe you're an enchanted princess of the type the romances describe. Follow me, please.
Now the policeman was a big, strong prey bird resembling an egok. He took off, brown wings flapping. She followed. Up over the roofs and the streets, so that she saw all the buildings and floating platforms and parks and the pattern of roads extending through the city like spiderwebs. Then, down to a large box-like building, all by itself. The policeman flew through an open window and lit before a large desk manned by a large policeman wearing sergeant's stripes. She flew in after him and landed on the floor at his side.
Sarge, you aren't going to believe what I've got here.
The Sarge lifted himself far enough off his chair to look down at her.
The centerfold from next month's police inquirer.
That's right. Feast your eyes.
Another pointing of the baton and... John waved at the smoke, which quickly dissipated. She was standing before a desk manned by a man in an unfamiliar uniform. A younger, similarly uniformed man was staring at her with open mouth.
My God, Sarge! This is a centerfold!
So I see. Not dressed like one, though, is she?
Sarge, she was an old woman when I found her. An ugly old woman. Looked like one of those malignant witches we're always hearing about. She was going through the garbage. Sarge, something isn't right.
John felt she had to agree with him. She stank. Partially, it was these filthy rags she had on. They were her own, but smelled like what the old woman had been wearing in the transported terminal and later at the store. John realized that they had also taken a beating, and now her brownberry shirt had tears in it that were showing parts of her torso. The biggest tear was along the side, and the young policeman was staring at it, or into it, where her left breast was exposed. Now she understood his remark about a centerfold. Those were reputed to be pictures showing similar flesh.
She does look a bit bewildered.
Sarge, do you think this is what it looks like?
We'll soon know, won't we? Who are you, miss?
I'm Mrs. Lester Crum. I was on my way to a convention. We left the transporter station and went to a store and...
Yes?
There was this old woman, a real hag. Well, she was dressed in dark clothes.
That's it, Sarge!
That sounds like it. Miss, you claim to be here from another world. Are you registered at the hotel? Are there people there who know you?
I never got to the hotel. I was going to try on a dress. I took it into the changing chamber, and that woman was there.
That tears it, Sarge. She has to be...
Shut up. Mrs. Crum, is your husband at the hotel?
Well, I doubt it. He didn't come with me. He said he didn't want to be around witches, even good ones.
But you're here. How is that?
Guest of the guest of honor. I helped Helba and my mother and brother when...
Helba? You're with Helba?
I was.
Sarge, this could be big.
Yeah, I'm thinking that myself.
Could be what we've always feared. Malignants infiltrating the convention.
Now wait, I'm not malignant.
No, of course not, Mrs. Crum. We are referring to witches. We suspect that the old woman you encountered, and who seems to have given you her form for a while, is such a person.
We'll have to send a SLAP team, and...
No, we'll just have to alert the wizard patrol that's already there.
But Sarge, if they're a malignant, shouldn't we go in with everything we have?
And mop up innocent old women who have been enchanted to look like witches? Mrs. Crum here must have been enchanted and her memory fogged so she couldn't protest. You want to smash folk like her?
No, I guess I wasn't thinking.
Now, we wouldn't want to disrupt the convention prematurely. Don't want any birds slipping through the net.
John listened, but hardly understood. just so long as the sergeant knew what he was doing, as he seemed to. One thing she did understand was that she was hungry and needed a bath and clean clothing. But if there was a big mess at the convention, could it be her fault? Shouldn't she warn Helba about the old woman and try to help Helba identify her?
Officer, may I see your baton?
He seemed about to refuse. Then she moved her arm clear of her torn shirt again, and he changed his mind. Smiling, the young policeman handed it to her. John studied it. Now, how had he done the changing? He had just pointed it and... She had pointed it at herself. She flapped her wings and took off even before the smoke had cleared.
Grab her! Don't let her out! She's a material witness!
Some material.
Then she was outside, climbing above the streets into the pretty blue sky. The chikuk was what John Knight called rubbery, and the salad was hardly garden fresh, but no one was there for the food. Nervously, Kelvin sipped his wine and looked over at John. She had a triumphant, even smug expression. Was it just that she would be sharing Helba's glory? A speaker stood at the great, clear, table-sized crystal in the center of the stage and rested his palms on it, which amplified his voice throughout the auditorium. The paean to Helba was long, flowery, and nice. Then Helba was at the crystal, her aged fingers on its surface.
Besotted witches and warlocks. Reputed witches and warlocks. No, that's not right.
Kelvin looked at his relatives. John was doing something with her fingers. Her expression had become fiendish. Her eyes spoke of anything but gentle fun. What was the matter with the girl?
I'm sorry. It must be the wine. Either that or a blather spell. Now, I want all of you to know I deserve this great dishonor. Zoanna, the rightful Queen of Rudd, learned witchcraft late, but she learned from a master. She and her chosen consort, Roforth, a strong king from another frame to replace the weakling Rufert, were bringing stability to my home frame when I interfered. Together with my sniveling accomplices, the pitiful bunch sharing this stage with me, I...
Helba! Something's wrong! You're not giving this speech you rehearsed!
And we destroyed them! By luck and treachery, assuredly, rather than ability. Destroyed the magnificent beings who could have made our worthless frame a magical center of power! Destroyed them through trickery and deceit and the improper application of a chimera's sting!
Helba, please!
The Toastmaster pulled at her arm. Helba glared at him and threw him back with a magical shove that sent him all the way to the rear of the stage.
You are honoring the worst witch who ever lived! Instead of fetting this ignorant bag of bones, you should be honoring sweet, gentle, beautiful Zoanna, whom she has so treasonably slain! And you should not be honoring round ears! Round ears are never magical in any frame! Round ears should be exterminated, especially these round ears! As for her helper and apprentice Charlaine, that ludicrous excuse for a woman, she should be executed also! Anyone who helped Helba should be destroyed and...
Helba fell senseless onto the crystal top. The Toastmaster at the far side of the stage was struggling to his feet as security wizards burst onto the stage from the wings. It was one of these, evidently, who had hit Helba with some counterspell. The audience was now on its collective feet. The Toastmaster reached the crystal and lifted Helba's face. Helba's eyes opened. She looked, Kelvin thought, surprisingly angry.
The spell has been dispersed. Now you can give your rightful speech.
Who wants to, with an infiltrator around?
Kelvin wondered again about John and about the way all of them had been acting and the peculiar way he still felt. He turned his head to look for his sister and saw a vacant chair.
I think that we all know what has happened. I appreciate the honor that brought us here, but...
A large, darkish something that smelled like what it was had dropped from above to land with unerring accuracy on Helba's head. At that moment, a great cloud of bats swooped down from the rafters and then out over the audience. Someone finally made the right spell and the bats vanished.
Just an illusion, folks.
The speaker made another pass of his hand, and the dung and stench were also gone. John came strolling out of the right-hand wing. She smiled sweetly and resumed her chair.
I had to go to the bathroom. Did I miss anything?
One of the security guards came up to her.
It's all right, miss. A little disturbance you're lucky to have missed.
Only a little disturbance? Back in the bathroom, it sounded as if a war was starting.
No, that won't happen, miss. You're better protected here than anywhere.
Oh, officer, I hope so.
John batted her eyelashes and quivered her flesh in a way that was almost indecent and not at all like her. It was as if a stranger had usurped her skin and...
What's the matter?
It was as if an axe was buried in...
But now his skull did not hurt, and there was no blood where he touched.
You got hit with something just now, didn't you?
I...
Don't worry. We have fine psyche healers here. They'll check you and the others.
Dazedly, Kelvin looked around. He saw Helba standing as if to resume her speech. Helba's eyes rolled up. She fell over onto the crystal as she had before. Then, as quickly as she had collapsed, she straightened up again. She stared at the audience with burning eyes, much like those of John the moment before.
You fools! You're dead! All of you are dead!
Quickly!
Suddenly, there were wizard batons extending from their arms, pointing. They were making an obvious sweep, searching for the hurler of the malignant vibes. The batons pointed up into the rafters, into either wing, above and around the audience. Meanwhile, Helba was pulling off her clothes. She ripped off her gown and her modest underclothes and stood there naked and gross. Her hands reached out, grabbed the arm-length golden broomstick trophy on its crystal pedestal and aimed its rounded end at her own groin, her muscles bunched.
This is for you, Helba! For you and your silly award!
She stood there, a statue award trophy held suspended at arm's length. Gently, a security wizard took the award from her and put it back on the pedestal. Witches came up on stage and wrapped Helba in a cloak designed for outerwear by a wizard. When Helba was properly covered, the security wizard touched her on the forehead.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed. How could I have done this? How could I have let it happen?
You didn't let it happen, Helba. You were magicked.
Out-magicked? But to say those things, and know I was saying them, but not to be able to help myself. Just stand here naked and...
Oh, don't you worry. We'll get the guilty party. We have to. The dignity of benign witches and warlocks everywhere has been insulted this night. We won't any of us dare to rest until all of us have been properly avenged.
They were waiting for her on the roof. When she had landed and did not immediately change, one of them walked over and changed her from her bird form. She was immediately John again, and had the feeling, as she looked at the stern wizard faces, that she was in more trouble than she had been in at the police station.
Ma'am, are you a guest here?
I'm with the convention, with Helba.
Then why is it you are not with her now?
It's a long story. I need to see someone in authority. There may be trouble.
You wish to see someone in security?
Yes.
I'm security. We had a report you were coming.
Who?
From headquarters. You left abruptly and were triced.
I'll cooperate with the police, but...
Then you can appreciate that we need to keep you out of sight. There may be another who looks like you but isn't. There may be a malevolent infiltrator in the convention.
That old woman...
is whom we suspect.
The wizard made a gesture. John was a bird again. She raised her wings, determined to take off and find the witch on her own and deal with her, or at least to find Helba. But the wizard was pointing at her and she couldn't move. She was as frozen as she had been by the witch's gesture in the store. An ordinary person just couldn't compete with magic. The tall wizard picked her up in his hands, carried her a short distance, and placed her in a cage. The wizard took her back to the police station in the cage, where she was placed upon the sergeant's desk. The young policeman was there as well. He pointed his baton at her. She expected to become John again inside the cage, but she remained a Dovjan. The only thing that was different was that now she could not move. She opened and closed her beak.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Crumb. For your own safety and the safety of others, you're going to remain in our custody. As soon as you can be released, you will be.
Kelvin! Oh, Kelvin!
It was John, hurrying along the hotel corridor. Obviously, something had gotten her excited, and he couldn't imagine what.
You look as if you've got amnesia.
If you mean I'm losing track, right. What have you been up to?
Well, Kelvin, I met this simply adorable warlock with the biggest, reddest...
John!
...cloak. And we went to his room and...
No!
...watched what was happening around the convention on his crystals. You don't need to run your legs off or attend things. You can just stay put. So nice, just lying there on the bed all day with someone pleasant and... ...and watching things. Well, Kelvin, I hate to tell you this, but I think the children skipped out.
What do you mean, skipped out?
I mean, they left the children's suite, left the hotel.
How could that be? There are young witches and warlocks watching them all the time.
Well, dearie, if you ask me, some of these young witches and warlocks get to watching each other. If you'd used a viewing crystal the way I did...
You mean you spied on them? Invaded their privacy?
They must subsist entirely on aphrodisiacs. When they're not birds mounting each other in the corners, they're planning on which rooms they'll visit. I tell you, I haven't witnessed such passionate fumbling since...
Oh, shut up!
Why, what's the matter, dearie? Don't you like hearing about it? Maybe if I tell you what the warlock and I were doing while we watched...
The children! The children!
Oh, yes, but they're gone. Not here in the hotel anymore. They've been gone since yesterday.
What? Why didn't you tell us?
I'm telling you now. Besides... You could have been watching them yourself, you know.
But they'll get in trouble.
Probably. You know your brats.
Where can they be? What can they be doing?
Anything their little depraved minds can think of, dearie. They had invisibility cloaks. All four of them were using them. But then the warlock and I got a bit distracted.
Invisibility? Cloaks?
Oh, yes. They probably stole them from one of the guests. They were stealing everything in sight once they had the cloaks. They stole a book of spells, and a book on the orc's opal, and a sword. They went all around the dining room tasting desserts. They tripped people and started fights. Those little kings have a real talent for goosing pretty women. You should have heard the screams. Oh, they had just a wonderful time. And the best part of it was that they were clever enough to stay invisible and never get caught.
I just can't believe it. My children do not steal.
Well, Kelvin, old witch's poop, they might not steal, but they certainly get sticky fingers. Not only that, but they are also interested in life. They not only went into people's rooms, they watched while they bathed, eliminated, and copulated. Really, Kelvin, if you knew how precocious those brats were, you'd want to lose them fast. You'll pay for that! Warlock's crap!
Where John had been, there was now a bird. This was a larger, uglier bird than he remembered her being before. Certainly not the Dovjan or the gawky swoosh. It took off, veering around conventioneers and skimming over their heads. It sailed down the hallway, around the bend, and out of sight.
What have I done? Oh, what have I done?
Kildim and Kildee were scared. All of them, including Charles, who would never admit he was scared, hung on tightly to tufts of great feathers where the scaly neck began. Down below, dizzyingly far, were spread out valleys, and in the distance were purple peaks. Then, quite suddenly, there were great patches of water, a swamp, with creatures great and small moving among big trees. The swamp thinned, the water patches broadened, vegetation became less dense, and trees seemed far behind.
Oh, no.
want us to land here, I don't.
We have to. We need to get the opal.
Charles, I want to go home.
Tough titty. We go back without it, and they'll skin us and eat us. Remember what Auntie John said.
Auntie John had changed so very much. She remembered those horrible pictures she had shown them. Witches, some of whom resembled Helba, and others of whom were beautiful, dancing around a fire, skinning a child, feasting.
I didn't know they did it either. But it's as our grandpa St. Helen said, seeing's believing.
But we only saw the pictures. Auntie John might have been lying to us.
You know what our Uncle Lester says? A witch is a witch is a witch is a witch.
He only says that to tease Auntie.
That's what our daddy says. You know how wrong daddy can be.
Yes, but so can granddaddy be. They don't call him St. Helens because he's never wrong.
No, because he has a temper. Boom! Like a big fire-puking mountain in a land called the State of Washington.
There's no such place. Our other granddaddy made it up.
You sure?
No. But Daddy always said that neither of our granddaddies should be believed when they tell stories about that place named Earth. No magic there at all. You just can't believe that.
No, but then Daddy tells us some whoppers, too. Like about how the Chimera ate at our birth. He says you look just like one of the Chimera's heads and that you're named after it. I look a little like the other human head. And there's Dragon Horus.
Who Mommy doesn't admit exists. Yes, yes, I know all that, but still.
Did you ever look into Daddy's mind when he told that story?
No. Not after he told us he could tell. Besides, both he and Mommy said not to.
I went in when he told that story, Merlaine. It's true. We are different.
Different because we can go into people's heads?
Yes. And maybe in other ways, too. We're smarter than others. Smarter than the royal pains, at least.
They were coming into land on what seemed a very large lily pad. The great bird dropped gently, folding its wings. And they were there. The wide green surface, like a carpet, bounced a bit, and water lapped its far edges. Though once down, she discovered that the edge was farther away than she could see. An insect the size of an ordinary bird took off. First Merlaine, then Charles, and then the two panes together slid down the feathery slope. They stepped away from the bird, and the bird took off again.
What do we do now, Merlaine?
Orc's castle is supposed to be on a small island in deep water, surrounded by rocks and waves. It's south, I think, and not too far from here.
Turn us into swooshes, then.
You know I can't. It'd have to be Helba or Auntie John. We'll have to walk.
On water? Oh, she can make herself into a giant and carry us. Good thinking, Kildee. As royal sovereigns of Klingland and Konts and effective rulers of the Confederation, we command you.
Merlaine held the bottle up and shook it. There was no use putting it off. She opened her mouth, tilted the bottle up, and let a tiny bit trickle down onto her tongue. Without warning, her feet broke through the green surface. Water, wet and cold, gripped her ankles. Her legs and hips were wet, and her new purple skirt.
Help! Merlaine, help us!
She stoppered the bottle and put it carefully away in her pack. Then she reached down to them.
Me first! No, me! I command it!
But at that moment, Charles disappeared, leaving a trail of bubbles.
Help! Merlaine! It's got me!
She reached down into the water quickly without thinking about it. Charles grabbed her fingers. Each of her fingers was now at least the length of their arms. She lifted them up and out, and there, dangling from him, holding onto a foot, was a creature like a kittyfish. Only this fish didn't have whiskers around its big mouth, but tentacles, three of which were wrapped around Charles' ankle. Carefully, she unwound the tentacles with her left hand.
Bad fishy.
Merlaine, get rid of it!
Oh, very well.
She flicked a finger and sent the tadwog flying tail overhead.
Take us out of here, Merlaine, before that drink wears off.
You sound like Grandpa St. Helens.
I don't sound like anything. I'm thinking at you. Go!
Charles, you want me to throw you back to that fish?
Merlaine picked the shallow places to step, and though her feet wanted to sink into the mud, she pulled them free and went on. From up here, her head almost scraped the sky. She could see farther than they could, and she spied boats with sails on them in the distance. Should she splash over to those boats and ask the boatmen directions? She was going in the right direction, she believed. But where was that castle?
You know we'll have to get our cloaks of invisibility when we enter the castle. We won't dare risk being seen.
So Auntie told us.
Don't you believe her, Merlaine?
Of course I do.
But did she? Did she really? She wasn't certain she believed anything Auntie John had said to them.
Merlaine, there's a sign.
Where?
On that tree.
She bent low. Now and then, being of great size had its problems. Now she saw the sign, but it was too small to be intelligible, though it didn't seem to have many regular words on it.
You read me the sign, Charles.
It's just an arrow sign. Points toward the sunset and says, Orc's Castle, 30 millimiles.
What's a millimile?
I don't know. I'll ask the Paynes.
Charles asked. They answered. She tried, but couldn't hear their faint piping voices.
They say it's a day's march for an army, Merlaine. I don't know if they know or not, but you better get us there before the magic wears off.
Ahead, she couldn't see too well, but she thought it might be the island. She held up her hand with her brother and the Paynes on it.
What do you see up ahead?
That's it! That's the island with the castle! He's right! I see it too!
She brought her hand down to a more comfortable level and cupped it up against the bodice of her dress. She didn't want to drop anyone. She didn't like it that the royal Paynes could see better than she could, even in giant form, but then they couldn't read each other's thoughts or mind communicate. That was a comfort. She forged ahead, going as fast as she could without stumbling, swinging her free hand wildly to keep her balance. After she had splashed a fair way, she began to see a hazy lump in the distance. Then she saw something moving on the water, something almost the same size as herself. She lifted her hand again, carefully holding her other hand ready in case someone fell. She was about to ask, but the Paynes were ahead of her.
Orcs! Swimming! Get down, Merlaine, before they see you!
She squatted uncomfortably, further wetting and dirtying her dress.
Now is the time, Merlaine. Use your cloak.
Hastily, she did as he suggested. She brought out her cloak of invisibility and covered all her head and body and her handful of boys.
Let's go right to the castle while you're still big.
Very sensible of Charles.
Hold us up. The Paynes can watch out for the orcs better.
She lifted them up under her cloak and held her hand cupped.
Keep going, Merlaine. There's no orcs close now.
None of them see you, Merlaine.
The Paynes had their uses, she guessed. She slid one foot ahead of the other and stepped right off an underwater ledge. She struggled to keep her balance and almost went down. She could feel the Paynes and her brother holding onto her fingers.
They see us!
No, kill them, they saw the splash!
Move carefully, Merlaine! Better yet, don't move! Wait until they turn away!
She moved one foot and then another. The bottom seemed slippery here, not at all the way it had been. She did not trust it at all. She was almost as afraid of falling down as she was of the orcs. The water got deeper suddenly, and the boys bigger.
Hurry, Merlaine, hurry! You're shrinking!
She moved faster, and the water continued to rise as she shrank down into it. It came up around her neck. She held the others high in her two hands, though they were now overlapping them and getting heavy. She took three more steps, then all four of them were in the water together. She could see the castle on the island. It seemed far away, very far. She was too tired to swim well. She could never get there. She sank beneath the heaving surface.
And she couldn't have known where they went if they were invisible. Magic crystal or not, she couldn't have followed them.
Oh, I quite agree. That definitely isn't John. It couldn't be her, even with a spell on.
What is it then? A look-alike from another frame?
Hardly, though barely possible. I'd say more like an imposter achieved through an identity exchange. Of course, these things are never perfect, but...
Can you save her, Helba?
Oh, yes, yes, of course. If she's not destroyed.
There was a pause of silence in their hotel room, which Kelvin found painful. After he had found Helba and Helm and his father, they had come straight here at Helba's suggestion. She suspected something, he thought, but he wasn't certain what.
Helba, could this be an enemy of yours?
Oh, undoubtedly. If not an enemy of mine, an enemy of goodness.
Can't you do anything? I mean now, so that we don't have to wait for the next attack.
Well, of course. Just give Helba time. We have the best practitioners of magic here at the convention. Certainly there are enough of us to deal with one of the evil kind. We are no longer ignorant of what is happening.
One?
Possibly. Almost certainly. But one of the evil kind can be quite a challenge.
Aren't there authorities? Police? Those trained to deal with bad witches and the like?
Helba didn't answer. She positioned one of the three crystals on a stand, passed her hand over it and around it, and started it swirling inside. A man wearing a light blue uniform sat at a desk.
Sergeant, this is Helba at the convention. What news of Mrs. Crum?
Safe, in custody, as you urged.
May we see her?
You may.
Helba directed the crystal vision with motions of her fingers. Seemingly, they drifted down a corridor to a large room filled with bird cages. Many of the birds were very ugly, but there was one that wasn't. A white dovegen.
John! May I speak to her?
You may.
John, this is Kelvin.
The white dovegen straightened up, hearing and recognizing his voice.
We know you're there, John, and we'll come to rescue you. But first we have to find whoever has been impersonating you. It shouldn't take much doing. There are witches and warlocks and sorcerers all through the hotel. No one wants an evil person here. No good person does, I mean.
The bird opened and closed its beak as if it wanted to speak, but John had not yet learned how to speak while in this form. The bird looked frustrated.
Please be patient, John. We know you've been through much, and it's not your fault or ours. Whoever the malignant agent is, she's used a variety of spells.
The bird agitated its wings and made a head motion of violent pecking.
Yes, yes, I know you'd like to get out and deal with her yourself, but that's no good, John. First, she's a really powerful evil witch. She would use magic on you and destroy you before you managed to pull out the first hank of hair. Second, we would not be able to tell the two of you apart, and our good witches would be as likely to bash you as her. So you're safer right where you are, Sister Wart, until they are through bashing your likeness.
The bird relaxed. It was evidently beginning to make sense to her, despite her extreme annoyance.
We'll singe her feathers proper. We'll get you back again, and the grandchildren.
Not to mention the two kings. Your impostor did something with all four children.
Oh, no, we don't think she's hurt them, but they're missing. Tell her, Helba.
Helba explained in soothing tones exactly what had happened and how they had gradually learned how things were amiss. She omitted certain embarrassing details, understandably.
It's certainly a malignant doing this, John, and one who has strength. We want to do more than just expel her from the convention. We want to punish her. Yes, 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 I know you'd like to tear into her. Possibly we'll need your help before we're done, but for now, you can help most by staying where you are. You'll be safe here in custody. And as Kelvin said, it would otherwise be too easy to confuse you with your imposter. She won't keep us confused with her spells forever. You'll be released soon, I promise you.
The bird did not look fully satisfied. Helba waved a hand, and the crystal went blank and was again simply a many-faceted piece of quartz.
What do you think she's up to, Helba?
I think she's here, hiding, laughing at us. She doesn't have to remain in John's form, or in any form at all. She could be invisible.
How very astute of you, Helba.
Yes, Katba, yes. It's the wicked witch Zadie. You tried to warn us when she impersonated John.
And you know me too, don't you, Helba? How very, very perceptive of you, dear.
I knew you'd be after revenge sooner or later. I expected you to wait 6 years for the convention so as to make a bigger splash. You have not disappointed me.
Then you prepared for me.
Of course.
With one quick motion, Helva threw the handful of powder she had kept concealed. It flew to the spot at which Katva was staring. An old, ugly hag materialized. They all stared.
Hello, Zadie.
You cheated. You had that powder ready. You threw it where the familiar was looking.
Where else? I told you I was prepared.
That was supposed to be a bluff. Well, counter this.
Katva leaped with outstretched claws and sank them into Zadie's bony hand before she could complete her gesture. Now Helva glanced at the men.
Muscle!
Propelled by her word, Kelvin and his father each grabbed one of Zadie's arms and threw her to the floor.
Get you from this, Helva!
Sticks and stones!
Suddenly, a group of sorcerer police came rushing into the room.
Oi! Get the net over her! Careful now, she's got a million tricks, and we don't want her to get away!
The police deployed the net.
You'll have to tell us about the children.
I do I? They're with DeVale. He's going to do things to them that will make them malignant.
I know better than that. You always lie, Zadie.
Sticks and stones will break your bones.
The woman became a great serpent as Kelvin and his father helped the police to cover her with a net.
The snake's an illusion, lad.
Kelvin was relieved. He had had quite enough of big serpents in past adventures, though witches were bad enough. Now the snake was gone, and in its place was a big, ugly bird with saw teeth. Katva grabbed the bird by its warty neck and held on, his orange eyes lifted in his dark, feline face looking to Helba.
Not yet, Katva! First, we must make her talk.
Now she was a voluptuous, red-haired young woman. Kelvin was holding on to one sleek, slender arm, his nose nudging one extraordinary breast.
What is it that you do to me?
Suddenly, Kelvin felt guilty. It was virtual rape. That was what they were doing to this lovely creature.
Let me go, oh handsome man, and I will be most grateful.
Suffer yourself not to be deceived. Whatever form she may assume, either physically or in illusion, her nature is unchanged. She is old and evil inside, and without scruples. Whether she caresses you or bites you is a matter of indifference to her, just so long as it is effective in accomplishing her purpose.
Fool.
Her beautiful face said, and became the ugly beak of the bird. The torso and legs returned to Buzzwold form.
You could have had it all, and your children safe, too.
Somehow the five of them, Kelvin, his father, and three undercover officers, got the net over, under, and around the ugly bird. The other officers materialized with a large cage. They maneuvered the witch Buzzwold into the cage and locked it. The luscious young woman reappeared, staring straight at Kelvin.
If you should change your mind, handsome man, you will know where to find me.
Kelvin tried to close his eyes, but her gaze held him locked. His very soul seemed enthralled. Then, someone threw an opaque cover over the cage, and it stopped. The witch could no longer ensorcel him with her eyes. The spell was broken. He was free, yet somehow he was grieving. The police were already levitating the covered cage with the witch prisoner in it out of the room.
We'll send her right back to you.
We don't want her!
He means your sister!
Oh, of course. Thanks.
Officers, be quick and careful.
We will, Elba.
We have to find the children, Elba.
Kelvin stared at his family's witch benefactress with all the earnestness of his being. He tried to suppress the notion that he was being even more concerned than usual because of guilt about almost being seduced by Zadie's vision. Now that his sister was really back, and now that he knew it had been Zadie instead of her, he understood much better about the way she had been exposing her flesh.
Of course we do, Kelvin. But remember, it's not so easy. Zadie is a trickster, and at least as powerful a malignant as I am a benign. She put up counter and recounter spells to make it impossible to follow their tracks.
Try again, Helba. There are children. Please.
Oh, very well. since you're all insisting. I'll just try a little more nullity powder this time.
Helba shook some purple powder over the square crystal. The crystal flashed, flushed, and held a scene.
Merlane, Charles, Kildum and Kildee.
It was the children's suite. Zadie, in John's image, was giving them the cloaks of invisibility. Now they followed the invisible adventures of the children. They saw them take food from people's plates, saw them take drinks that were intended for adult witches and warlocks, saw the John-likeness whispering, making passes, spilling more of a powder. Now they were tripping people, pinching, kicking, and slapping exposed adult rears.
Inhibition release, a component of the powder. Certain mischief for children.
Now the children, still invisible, were entering rooms. They were alarming people, scaring them, starting fights. At room after room, the John fakery remained just outside the door. Zadie was making sure that the children misbehaved. The young king's hands reached out of nothingness in the hawker's room and took books. First, a big leather-bound volume, and then another. Charles' hand took a sword from a storeroom of some guest exhibit. Merlane's hand emerged again to take a bottle from some lady witch's dresser. Kelvin shook all over. He couldn't stand dishonesty. It made him sick to see his children practicing thievery.
How can they do such things?
All of us have mischievous desires. The process of growing up is to learn to curb those desires and to behave in a civilized fashion. The twin kings are more of a handful than most, and at times I despair of ever straightening them out. In this case, Zadie saw to it that they would have very little restraint because of her magic. So they are being normal, given the situation. It doesn't mean they're bad children, just that they have temporarily lost their guidelines. They will straighten out again when returned to a proper environment.
Now they were back at the children's suite, Zadie, as John was looking fiendishly right at them from the crystal. It was as if she had anticipated their replaying of this scene and catching her here. Her hands sprinkled a sparkling powder over the children's heads, and as the powder settled, all movement ceased. John, Zadie, grinned at the crystal, resuming her natural appearance. She must have wanted them to get this far so she could laugh at them. Helba dropped some powders on the crystal. The scene remained the same. Zadie's gap-toothed grin was neatly framed. A portrait.
What will we do? Helba, you have to tell us.
It won't work. Even a link-up of power won't help. It isn't a matter of energy. It's magic of a different kind. She prepared for this investigation of ours, just as I prepared for my meeting with her. I'm afraid, friends, that there's nothing at all I can do to make the crystal follow the children beyond this point.
Then you can't do anything? Nothing at all to locate the children?
Nothing that I know of.
Merlane was lying on stones, almost under a great rock which towered above her. She was on her stomach, and someone was pressing hard on her back.
You all right, Merlane?
Kildum was sitting astride her backside, and his weight was squashing her bottom uncomfortably when he wasn't putting weight on his hands. That made him a royal pain in the rear. She finally understood what that saying meant.
Get off me, pain!
What?
Thank you so much for helping me. Now will you please let me get up?
Oh.
Kildum got off her, evidently understanding her second statement better than her first. She turned over, sat up. Her new dress was ruined. Her pack lay by her side and... where was the invisibility cloak? She must have lost it. The thought made her want to cry. She started to raise a hand to her eyes and realized there was something she couldn't see wrapped around her fingers and arm.
I still have the cloak.
Of course you do. I wouldn't have rescued you without it. I could see most of you, but not your hand and arm.
Merlane looked, and the other kinglet was astride her brother's back, pushing down on his shoulders. She got to her feet, feeling very weak and wobbly herself. She took one step toward Charles, wondering how it was that the orcs had not spotted them.
Charles, are you all right?
No, I'm drowned. They saved us the pains! Now I can't get back at them! I can't feed them to an orc as I intended!
Don't worry about it. They did save us. Now maybe you can save all of us.
How?
How do I know? Men are the heroes, aren't they? That's what you always tried to tell me.
The castle, the orcs, the opal.
Right. We have to hurry before they catch us.
The cloaks.
I've got mine.
In a moment, they were all four invisible. Hand in hand, using the technique they had practiced at the convention, they moved around the rocks on their way to the castle.
Which doorway?
This one has to be the servants' entrance.
She followed her invisible hand and the pain's invisible grip on it. Slowly, very slowly, so as not to alert the big, gilled creatures doing kitchen work, they crept through the kitchen and into a large room with tables and chairs. A dining room. She did hope they weren't going to have to climb the stairs. Each step was so high that they would need to boost each other up each step.
The opal is supposed to be in the throne room. I read that in the book.
It has to be the big room ahead. This room should adjoin it. Kings like to eat a lot. You should know.
They moved at a fast shuffle across the parquet floor with its interlaid blocks of stone and into the throne room. There was the throne, even bigger than Merlaine had anticipated. There was the opal, as beautiful as she had imagined, sitting all by itself in a velvet-lined case to the right of the throne. The opal was the size of a small viewing crystal back at the convention. Remarkable colors were dancing in the huge gem, pulling at her attention. Blue, green, bluish green, greenish blue, sky, water, water sky, sky water, sunrise, noon, and sunset.
And now that you've seen it, perhaps you will explain how you happen to be here?
Merlaine looked up to see a great gilled throat and flaring green nostrils. As she did, she realized that neither she nor the boys were now invisible. This great orc, whatever it was, had done something that had changed their cloaks to transparent coverings. The large, brutal-seeming face was that of the orc in the stolen book, Brutalus, King of Opal. In Charles' hand, there was now not a sword, but another hand, a girl's. As he looked on the small hand where the handle of his sword had been, Charles saw the outline of a young girl in a nightdress. Gradually, she took shape and form, glowing in the manner of a fragrant candle.
Glow! It's been so long! I thought I'd never see you again!
She smiled at him.
You were wrong. It has only been 2 days.
Can we play in the fields and woods as we did before?
Yes, Charles.
Abruptly, she was running and hiding in tall grass, and he was eagerly running after her. Charles thought of the orcs and Merlaine and the pains in their prison with him. He knew he'd have to wake. He didn't want to do that. He wanted to be with Glow and dream of her always. The thought of anything else was too painful to bear. Finally, a long, happy day having passed in what seemed also like a moment, they lay side by side on a pinkish bed of moss.
Charles, you've been doing great wrong.
Playing with you? How?
No, my love. In your waking life.
This is a dream?
You know it is. It always has been.
You mean you're my dream girl?
In my way, yes. But the evil you are doing is no dream, Charles.
Why, Glow?
Don't you know why you do wrong? An evil person has misled you in your waking life. You must not let her. Don't do her bidding, Charles. If you do, you will never dream of me again.
Don't you want to play with me, Glow? Ever again?
I can't, Charles. Not if you do evil. I cannot abide evil.
What must I do? How can I make it right?
I'll try to tell you, Charles. You and your sister and the two kings. But you must not do evil. You must not. Ever again.
I won't.
Charles thought of the orcs and Merlaine and the pains in their prison with him. He knew he'd have to wake. He didn't want to do that. He wanted to be with Glow and dream of her always. The thought of anything else was too painful to bear. But even as he whispered, he was waking up. There, around him, were the orcs' castle walls. He sat up, breathing deeply of salt-scented air that had been so real, so magical. He could love that little girl, love her even when the two of them grew up. He did love her, but already he was forgetting. He was able to cling to only one thing, the only thing that would ever bring her back.
Do no evil.